Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They sent the disciples to him along with the Herodians. "Teacher," they said, "we know you're a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, "You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used for paying the tax." They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, "Whose portrait is this, and whose inscription?" "Caesar's," they replied. Then he said to them, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." When they heard this, they were amazed. So they left him and went away.
Well, good afternoon. "Pay your taxes," says Jesus, and I'm sure you do. I look around the room and see upstanding people. But you can never quite tell, can you? I mean, dear Gary Barlow with his OBE, what a national treasure he is. The Queen will get him in to organise all sorts of things. And yet it emerges £20 million is the tax he owes. Now, I don't know if you hear that sum, it makes you angry, or like me, you think, "Totally, golly, that's a lot he's earned. That means he's still worth, not bad. And £20 million, no wonder HMRC says, "Gary, we want that back. We want it back. We want it back for good."
Sorry.
Very good. Well done, Ali. That's a lot of money. "Pay your taxes," says Jesus. But it's not really, I guess, a question about tax. That becomes the presenting issue. I guess the underlying issue here is, what's the relationship then, if you're going to follow God? What's the relationship between following the Lord and following government? But that's a very real question for 21st century, 2014, internationally. When you look upon something like the absolute horrors taking place in northern Iraq by the Islamic State, you say, "Well, we follow God, not any government." That sort of relationship between, do I follow the Lord? What happens when it clashes with government? That's quite a pressing issue there. Or even, in a much milder sense, domestically, when perhaps the freedom of sexual expression trumps legally the freedom for religious conscience, what does that mean? What does that look like? How would you do if you're a Christian? Or just personally, every individual Christian, if you call yourself one, you've got to work out how your relationship to the Lord relates to that you have with the state, your employer. What happens? I mean, most of the time there's no issue, but if there's a clash, what do you do? It's a very lively sort of question that we're looking at this lunchtime. Now, we're back to Matthew's Gospel for a few weeks, September time. And jumping in here to chapter 22, Jesus has just told three parables slamming the religious establishment in particular, telling them over and over again, "You're the old guard, you just completely missed the point, and you're going to miss out on the kingdom of heaven." They're not happy with him. And so now, if you can call it, the establishment comes back, religious, but again today, political. The Herodians, they're sort of supporters of the Roman occupation. They're gathering together, they're going to try and attack Jesus with a set of questions. So this week it is, how should a Christian relate to the government of the world? Next week, how should we conceive of eternity? It all sounds a bit ethereal, what should we think about that? The following one, what matters most to God? But this one, then, how should a Christian think about his relationship with the Lord and with the state, the government, the authorities, those over him? We can see what's going on. It's a trap. Says Admiral Akbar, and indeed Jesus here in Matthew 22, verse 15. The Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. It's a hunting word, trap. We have great fun as a family. We went to the island of Borneo to visit some friends out there. And one of the things they love to hunt are these bearded pigs, not for their beard, they just trim those off, but they are wild boar. They cause all sorts of damage, and in truth, they're pretty tasty to eat. So you see, lying around, don't tread in one, obviously, but you see on the fringes of the jungle, these massive, about 1 meter in diameter, metal traps that they're going to try and catch a wild boar. They're not wanting to trap it to have a conversation. So, Mr. Wild Boar, how are you? Nice beard. How have you trimmed it? They want to kill it and eat it. The people here, they want to trap Jesus. They don't like him. That's what's going on. It's all very polite, of course. Verse 16, there's middle class about it all. They send their disciples along. Teacher, we know you're a man of integrity, and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men, because you pay no attention to who they are. But, there's a but coming. This is sort of like the conversation of, Brian, you're a marvellous employee. We love what you've done for the company. You've always done very well, but here's your P45. It's that sort of but about to come to him. Here's the crunch, verse 17. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Now, taxation upsets people. It's a number of years, 24 years ago, the poll tax riots. Oh, a long time ago. Rioting on the streets of London. We didn't see anything like it until just a couple of summers ago. But that's what had been taking place here. In 12 AD, the Romans had introduced a poll tax to pay for roads and everything they were building. And the inhabitants, the Israelites, they didn't like it. There'd been rioting. There'd been murder in the streets. It's a hot issue. Everyone has an opinion upon tax. And so they're asking him this question, trying to trap him. The reason being, if Jesus says, yeah, pay your taxes, he loses all his support. Joe Average, the man who's been following him, is going to say, well, he's a lackey. If Jesus says, no, don't pay your taxes, well, that's treason. That's the trap. They think they've got him now. They think they've been clever. Jesus' response is brilliant. Three little things then. There's a debt to Caesar, a debt to God, a debt we could not pay. See how he replies then. First of all, there's a debt to Caesar. Jesus, verse 19. Show me the coin used for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius. And he asked them, whose portrait is this? And whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Whose portrait is this? Literally, whose image appears here? Who owns this? You see his point. You've got this coin, the queen on ours, and there's a relationship. You use the queen's coin. She, by the Bank of England, I know, is saying, I guarantee it. I establish its worth. I, as my role as governor of this land, ensure that this genuinely is worth £2. You can take it to a bank. But her face is the guarantee that it works. And I'm actually using the Queen's coin, as we can do, both sides of the Scottish border at the moment. But using the Queen's coin, it's saying, I live under your rules. And I agree that I benefit from you. And now they were using Caesar's coin. And the Israelites, they did benefit. They got new aqueducts, they got fresh water, better than before, sewage better than before, the roads were better than before, they got security. They didn't ask for all these things, I know, but there were benefits. We don't ask for everything the government does for us, many things we'd prefer they didn't, but there are benefits to living under a government that secures these things. They ask Jesus, verse 17, is it right to pay taxes? He replies, verse 21, give, not pay. The verb is literally pay back. It always used to get translated, render unto Caesar. They say, should we pay? He says, pay back. Because you do owe Caesar for what he's given you. You owe him. Now, no one enjoys taxation. None of us really like it. None of us look at our pay slips and think, well, I've earned that much, but woohoo! Thankfully, the government has taken 20, 40, whatever percent away of it. I'm so thrilled. What a great delight. But there are benefits, of course. If on your way back to the office, you are scythed down by a lycra wearing loony on a bike. I'm not looking at anyone in particular. If you're scythed down and you need an ambulance, you ring 999. You're pretty miserable. You just get a recorded message. This service is no longer available. Your subscription ended when you stopped paying tax. That's it. Oh, well now what do I do? Private company? Probably is one in Mayfair, isn't it? Probably is a private medical firm you could just bring up. But, you know, taxes, they bring us benefits. Of course they do. Give to Caesar. What is Caesar, says Jesus? You benefit from the Roman state. And the New Testament would underline that elsewhere. Pay what you owe. Even when the government is poor. Even when taxation is too high. Obey. Pay. Poor government is better than no government. It's a general New Testament observation. Pay, Romans 13, Titus 3. And Jesus is clear elsewhere. I've not come to set up a government on earth. My kingdom is not of this world, he says, John 19. I don't want the state of Jesus Christ geographically located. That's not my kingdom. I've not come to do that. No, there are obligations you have if you're a follower of mine, but you have obligations to the state. Pay your taxes, he says. Give to Caesar what you owe. There's a debt to Caesar. Secondly, though, that isn't where he stops, because there is also a debt to God. So verse 21, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. Remember the verb, it's pay back to Caesar what you owe him, pay back to God what you owe him. Coins have Caesar's portrait on them. They have his image upon them. Whose image is upon the coin? And everyone agrees what Jesus is saying here is, and humans, whose image is upon you? It is that of God. Genesis 2:27. God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Yeah, give coins back to the government. They have the image of the queen upon them. You pay your taxes. But humans have the image of God upon them. Pay God back what you owe. That's his point. Give to God what is God's. All that we have, all that we are, is his. But here, in saying this at the same time, pay to Caesar what is Caesar's, pay back God what is God's, Jesus, he's sort of placing a limit upon our responsibilities here. Don't give too little to the government. Pay back your taxes. Don't give too much. Your loyalty comes to the Lord first, if you're a follower of him. So you see that elsewhere in the New Testament. So you get to Acts chapter 5. The apostles are on trial for preaching. They're told, you stop your preaching or we'll throw you in prison. They say, well, I don't care. We must obey God rather than men. And so they're flogged. They accept their punishment. Don't give the state too little. Don't give the state too much. Lots of countries allow dual citizenship. So you can have, I don't know the details, but you could be a citizen of the UK and of the US. You could be a citizen of the UK and Australia. Citizen of Panama and the UK, I don't know. But some countries don't allow that. You have to choose. You could only be one. So you can't be a citizen of the UK and Singapore, says the Singaporean government. It's us or no one. Unlucky. You can't be a citizen of the UK and Djibouti, I've learned. If you can find it on a map, good on you. I couldn't, so I looked it up when I met someone from there. You have to choose. You can't be a citizen of the UK and Uzbekistan if you attempted. And if you got to choose, well, you know, think hard about that one, perhaps, before you... Some states don't allow it. They say only one. Now, every Christian is essentially a citizen of at least two nations. The UK, if that's your place of birth, and the kingdom of heaven. You have two passports. But Jesus is here saying, if you ever had to choose, you choose this one. The kingdom of heaven. Most of the time you don't. You have responsibilities to both, and you live happily in both. But that one comes first. That has your loyalty. You have a debt to God. But let me push this a little ABC by way of application. Anxiety, benefits, and challenge. ABC. Anxiety. Increasingly, there'll be some who read this, or things such as the apostles in Acts 5, we must obey God rather than men, and it makes them nervous. So I don't like it, they'll say. I don't like it when Christians say loyalty is to the Lord first rather than government. That just makes me anxious about what they'll do, whether they'll do something crazy like Islam and his loyalty to Allah in northern Iraq, northern Syria. It makes people a little bit nervous sometimes. What, some comments on that. One, of course, Jesus does say love. He doesn't say exterminate your enemies. He doesn't say behead them. He doesn't say extend my kingdom by force. He doesn't say that. He says love your enemies. He says serve your country. There's a fundamental difference. The Christian is commanded by Jesus Christ to act for the good of their country. As long as we're clear on that. Christians will work for the good of the nations they live. But also it is worth bearing in mind sometimes having a loyalty to a God outside of a nation is a very useful thing. Andrew Wilson, A.N. Wilson, writes a column still just about most weeks at an Evening Standard. You'll read it on your way home. Historian, noted scholar, etc., etc. He's one such person. An atheist who was always deeply anxious about Christianity and very nervous about what sort of citizens Christians would be. So throughout the 80s and 90s, produced lots of books commenting on this. Jesus Christ, he was a nice bloke, but St. Paul, he really created Christianity. He was nasty, he was evil, and that's what Christians are like. Produced lots of such things that a few years ago became a Christian. It's always worth... always interested in those who've been passionately anti, then become Christians, obviously. It's quite a large collection of those in that camp. But when you read his reasons why, and there's multiple, but one of them, I'll read you a brief comment that he made. He wrote a book. Well, let me read it to you. He expresses himself slightly fluidly, but one thing that finally put the tin hat on my aspirations of being an atheist was writing a book about the Wagner family in Nazi Germany and realizing that the most potent opposition came from Christians, and they paid for it not in a clear intellectual victory but in blood. And he goes on to say, I thought to myself, why did lots of people thought what was going on was wrong? Why is it the Christians stood up and said we'll die? He goes on, I realised it was because they had an objective standard of what was good and what was evil. They weren't just carried along with the culture. Well, everyone thinks this, we'll just go with them. They had an objective standard of good and evil from their God, which enabled them to take a stand that others wouldn't take. He looked at that and thought, I like that. That's right. That was one of the things that led to him becoming a Christian. So just before you're anxious, bear that in mind. It's good. The Christians are loyal to a loving God. That's a word of anxiety. Just a comment on benefits. It's easy to forget the benefits of living under God's rule. It is easy to forget the benefits of any taxation. One of my friends is a great sparring partner verbally. He's just extremely right-wing in almost everything. Just by default, also now by sort of self-depicted caricature. He's a member of the Adam Smith Institute, loves to come out with comments along the lines of, you know, taxation is the confiscation of our property by people who prefer to spend it on their priorities rather than mine. He wrote to me the other day along those lines. He's right-wing at everything. And I met up with him fairly recently. He was sort of frothing at the mouth on such comments. Whatever your views. Just calm down a little bit. There are benefits, aren't there, to this form of government that we have. I mean, I think I'm right in saying both your kids were born in NHS hospitals, and one of them was very complicated in there for a while. I think I'm right that they're still both at
state-funded schools.
It seems that whenever we meet, you're a passionate advocate of nuclear deterrence. That costs money. And just to be clear, you are employed by the BBC, who I pay for my tax. So to be honest, it's not all bad, is it, having taxation? There are some benefits you get back. You take them for granted, of course we do. We take these things for granted all along, all the time. It's quite easy to take for granted the benefits of being a Christian. Or living in God's world. This is a fun world. Oh, it's full of sadness. But there's a lot of fun to be had in God's creation. A lot of pleasure to be had to the people and things of this world. Of course, if you're a Christian, you know more. You know his fatherly care over our lives. You know purpose. There's a motivation. You know that what you do will last into eternity. Above all, you know you have forgiveness. Eternity, eternal life of great joy to look forward to. But many of us, if we are Christians, just take those things for granted. Yeah, we know those. But sometimes you just need to vocalise them. The great benefits to following the Lord. A little anxiety benefits challenge, just as we finish. A little challenge. I guess the challenge here, render to God what is God's. What do you have that has not been given to you by the Lord? There is nothing. It's all His. I'm sure sometimes it's good to look at a coin and think, yes, this is the state's property and I get benefits from living under the rule. Sometimes it's probably good to get a mirror. This is not my mirror, I borrowed it from a female on the way in, just in case you're wondering. But probably somewhere it's good to look in a mirror and say, here I am, and there's a sense in which I barely see myself. What use is this thing? Here I am, and as a human I bear the image of God. And there are huge benefits. You can say that to yourself when you look in the mirror. Well, you know, don't get distracted by your own appearance. But I am made in the Lord's image. There are wonderful benefits to following Him, but I own everything. It's all His. What have I got here? My money. It's His. My diary. My social life. It's His. My property. My house. It's His. It's all His. Nothing I have which He has not given me. Give to God what is God's. I owe Him everything. There's nothing I shouldn't give up to Him. My life is His. There's a debt to Caesar, a debt to God. And then, of course, this is a debt that we couldn't pay. Verse 22, when they heard this, they're amazed. Well, of course, Jesus' answer is brilliant. No great surprise. He makes better sense of life than anyone does. He's God. He's the one who has the very image of God upon Him. And He is the one who did render to God, who did give back to His Father everything that was due, perfect obedience, a perfect life. And so there's an old hymn, I don't know if you ever sing it in church now, an old hymn, I owed a debt I could not pay, He paid a debt He did not owe. And of course that's the story of the cross. One of the verses, I owed a debt I could not pay, and it was growing every day, but Jesus paid it all for me. He gave His life on Calvary. We don't give God what we should. But Jesus paid the debt that we owe in our place. Every year on the 19th of May, hundreds gather at the Czech Embassy in London to celebrate the birthday of Nicholas Winton. Do you know Nicholas Winton? He was 105 this year, and still hundreds gather at the embassy every year for his birthday. He can barely rip open a present, let alone give an impressive speech. But every year hundreds gather. Why so? In 1939, he was a banker based in the city of London, in Hampstead, but he was a banker in the city. He went out to do a little bit of dealing in Czechoslovakia and found himself in the Sudetenland, which had just been annexed by the Nazis. In 1938, he was there just at the end of that year. and he saw what was going to take place. And so from January 1939 through to the outbreak of war in September 1939, he smuggled out of the country 662 Jewish children who were Czech. Got them all passports and made them citizens in the UK. Got them all homes where they were fostered or adopted. And saved them. And so it's estimated there are over 6,500 of Nicky's children, as they call themselves, descendants of those 660. Many of them still living in Czechoslovakia, some in the States, some in New Zealand. But many will get in a plane and fly back to this incredibly frail old man and listen to everything he's got to say. Why would you bother? They know they owe him everything. They would not be alive were it not for that man. And so, of course, they'll give up a day. They'll give up the cost of a flight for him. The Christian knows that Jesus Christ has given up everything. I owe the debt I could not pay. He paid the debt he did not owe. And so I say, it's yours, Lord. What would you have me do? Because you paid my debt. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Render unto God what is God's. It's your life.
Father, sometimes we can read of the life of Jesus and be struck by his power to do extraordinary things. But here we see his wisdom in such a simple sentence, profoundly answering those who seek to trap him, profoundly directing how we should live our lives today. Will we be those who are good citizens of this nation, but also those who recognize the debt we owe to you, both as creatures of the living God, and for some of us as Christians, as those who know we've been saved by his paying our debt, will we therefore give our lives to you. Amen.